This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. You know those lists you see? You know, the ones celebrating self-made millionaires and the richest people in America? They speak to our fascination as a country with people going from a little to a lot. You know, the classic rags-to-riches storyline. But what those narratives tend to leave out is that many of those people, if not most of them, were already well off when they began their careers. Alyssa Court is the executive editor of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, and that is one of the many points she makes in her latest book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So your book, it challenges an idea at the heart of our national narrative, which is, you know, that individual success, making it without the help of anyone, is not only an achievable thing, but, you know, something we should strive for. Tell me about the significance of this narrative and why you push back on it.
Well, I think we need to go back to the beginning, which is this idea of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and the idea of the self-made man, which were coined roughly 2 years apart. So this is in the 1830s. Boots were really important in the 19th century. You know, to work, you had to have them. They were a real indicator of where you were in the pecking order. If you're wealthy, you had someone who could help you put them on, literally, or you had a machine to put them on. If you're a working man, you were struggling to pull them up every day and you really needed to, you know, have them on your feet. So pulling yourself over your bootstraps became, over time, this symbol of getting ahead in this country all on your own steam. And it's like this toxic mythology or folk psychology that controls a lot of people's inner lives, our economy, our policy choices. Yeah.
So, okay, so this idea of bootstrapping, we have internalized it for decades, and you write about how it was introduced by people like Horatio Alger, Ayn Rand, you even mentioned Laura Ingalls Wilder, you know, in The Little House on the Prairie. How did these kind of cultural figures reinforce the value of self-reliance?
Yeah, so Laura Ingalls Wilder and her daughter were both, I'd say, conservative libertarians, and they plotted out this biographical, you know, series of novels as a retort to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal. I loved it as a child. My daughter loved it. I write about this in the book. But at the same time, it's hard to forget that all of these families benefited so much from societal largesse, yet were obsessed with asserting how individualistic they were, and they were using the books as propaganda, basically.
I know you call it a little house of propaganda, which I thought, which I thought was really funny. Okay, so let's connect this to public policy. At one point in the book, you coined a term that really stuck with me, and that is the dystopian social safety net. What is that that you're referring to, and how does self-reliance get us to that point?
Yeah, I mean, if we have a country where the social welfare state is much more fragile than, say, other advanced industrialized countries, right? You have people then relying on this ragtag network of nonprofits, volunteers, crowdfunding. You know, sometimes it can be a very beautiful thing. Sometimes it's like your neighbors helping you. And I write about the power of that. But often it's, you know, people having to crowdfund their medical expenses or the that incredible thing that I think it happened a few years ago when teachers, there was a giveaway I write about in the book where people, they threw dollars on a skating rink and these teachers went and grabbed the dollars and started. To me, that was like the visual version. I was like, when I was watching, I was like, that's the dystopian social safety net if it could be a TikTok video. You know? It was so exquisitely
that's
horrible.
So twisted.
So twisted, but that's what it is, right? And that's the thing that we need to also avoid, which is that, you know, there's a few bright spots and they're just individual, right? Because we can't think more collectively about having more networks that actually function.
So let's talk about where we go from here. You propose a lot of changes, and many of them are extensions, I think, of what we've seen over the last several years in response to the pandemic. If you could talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I reported on a lot of different forms of a new American dream is what I called it. But it includes things like workers' co-ops, mutual aids, participatory budgeting, which are, you know, kind of citizens getting involved in their local budgets. But it's also, you know, different kinds of philanthropy. And there are people like the Patriotic Millionaires or Solidaire, and they even have said they want to liberate wealth, which I thought was interesting use of language.
And, you know, if this bootstrap narrative is such a part of our DNA, can we get rid of it completely? I mean, should we?
Well, that's the thing. People are like, well, you know, I worked hard. You worked. And, you know, I had to look into myself when I was writing this book because there are parts of me that have been susceptible to, I won't say the self-made narrative exactly, but to the drive yourself and achieve and accomplish at any cost. But that for me, psychologically, it's been really actually revelatory to be able to see things as kind of attribution, to be able to think of the people who've helped me do something like write a book or create this organization, which I've now run for almost 10 years. There's possibilities that avail themselves once you start to look at this differently and you see things as more community-based.
Alyssa Quart is the executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. Her newest book is Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Definitely recommend you check it out. Alyssa, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much.